Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to America Meditating. I'm your host, Sister Jenna. We are doing a special presentation today as we honor and interview Dr. Bernie Siegel, who's one of my old-time, long-time mentors. But before we go into interviewing Dr. Siegel, I just want to catch up. How's everyone doing? How's the life treating you? Is the mind still your most powerful resource? Are you still looking for it on the outside? Are you looking for someone to love you well? Are you looking for lots of money? Are you looking for a better-looking nose? Are you looking for something on the outside to make you feel better about who you are? You know, today someone called me from the from a place, and they were sharing with me about someone's behavior and attitude. And the person was basically expressing that they were not being informed of the decisions that were being made. And then they were saying, oh, the atmosphere is like, you know, a train station in India and et cetera, et cetera. And I'm listening to the person sharing, and I'm going, leave them alone. You be the embodiment of love and let the vibration created in the atmosphere, or you go to the individuals and say, shh, just a little bit softer, please. We're in a sacred space. You know, the reason why I'm bringing out this story is we are spending so much of our valuable life looking at other people, thinking about other people, speaking about other people, and holding other people hostage in our own minds. And that's one of the reasons we do get ill, whether it's our blood pressure, whether it's heart, whether it's kidney, this, that. And I'm not saying that we're not struggling with ourselves in some way or the other. We do. And we are all looking for support, first from within ourselves, and secondly, with those that we trust around us. It's a great need. But it just, my empathy emerges traumatically when someone who's very, very beautiful misses the cue on life. Stop thinking, looking, speaking, and holding people hostage that they should do and be what you want them to be, or they should suffer the same sort of a hell that you went through, or else, etc., etc., etc. We are moving up and we are rising, and I love the age of Aquarius that we're in, where really we're beginning to flow more from the best part of our personality and our being. We are looking more in a way to our thoughts and what our thoughts are saying about the person that we are, but also the person that we wish to become. You are listening to America Meditating. It is a radio show that is covering stories from real people who are going through real life situations. Folks who have moved beyond the dark night of the soul and have claimed victory over themselves first and are beginning to move closer and closer into the light of truth and the light of wonder. Just to give you a little bit of an update, we will be presenting our latest CD, the Off to Work CD by Sister Jenna. You can get that by just Googling online, and it's really to prepare your mind before you head off to work so that you can be open when you step into the workplace. You can be of service when you're there. And feel free to come by the Meditation Museum in downtown Silver Spring, which really is an oasis for everyone who walks in the door. They automatically feel a sense of themselves and a sense of spirit, a sense of lightness, and a sense of truth. I'd like to take this time to hold a moment of silence for a friend of mine who passed away this morning in Canada, Steve Narayan, who was once the ambassador to India of Guyana and also a minister in Guyana and a very, very loved human being in the Brahma Kumari community. He passed away peacefully and lovingly today on July 30th, and we will hold his spirit and the wonderful contribution he made in his life. So let's take this moment and just offer the best wishes, the best peace, and just emerge within our own hearts and mind real love that asks for nothing in return, but love that just is. My sweet brother Steve, we wish you an incredible continued journey. You have blessed us with only the best of human character. Your smile, your royal, distinguished manner of existing in the world, something that we will miss, but we are clear you will bring that forward in your next birth, playing your next role. And I'm looking forward to seeing you again real soon. So that's to you, Uncle, who we all call affectionately. We dedicate the show to you. All right. So life is death and death is life. They're actually the same, aren't they? The more we fill the soul with all the divine qualities of the human spirit, the more we'll realize there's no such thing as death. It's just a transition, just moving on. And this brings me to someone I have admired since I was a teenager. I hope this doesn't reveal his antiquity on earth, but for many, Dr. Bernard Siegel, or who we call affectionately as Bernie, needs no introduction because he has touched many lives all over the planet. In 1978, he reached a national and then international audience when he began talking about patient empowerment and the choice to live fully and die in peace. As a physician who has cared for and counseled innumerable people whose mortality has been threatened by illness, Dr. Siegel embraces a philosophy of living and dying that stands at the forefront of the medical ethics and spiritual issues our society grapples with today. May 2011, he was honored by the Watkins Review of London, England, as one of the top 20 spiritually influential living beings on the planet, and we have him on the America Meditating Show. Dr. Siegel, I am so honored to have you on our show. Do you know I've known you since I was a teenager?
Why as a teenager? What made you know me then?
Well, I don't know if you know my great-grand-aunt. Do you know Daddy Janky, 4 feet, 10 inches, stick of dynamite, the head of the Brahma Kumaris?
Sounds familiar.
You were in Miami.
Yeah.
You were in Miami many years ago, and I was there kind of like...
A lot of years, right.
Yeah, and you were doing a conference, and Daddy was also speaking on spirituality, and we met you there. And from that first time I met you, just a little girl with little, you know, scrawny little ponytails, and I just thought you were so incredible, and I'm so happy to have you on the show today.
Well, thank you.
Hi.
You know, I think, in a sense, what makes me incredible, and I think that's the potential for everybody to be incredible, is that, you know, I grew up with loving parents and grandparents, so I wasn't afraid to be different, if you know what I mean, and to speak about things that most doctors would say, oh, I can't accept that, or, you know, I mean, they just, you know, it was not part of their beliefs, but I was not afraid to share what became a part of my experience. And I always say, just because I can't explain something doesn't stop me from accepting it. So if I see the truth, I know it has happened. You know, I keep saying quantum physicists and astronomers can't tell us how we all got here, but they accept the fact that we're here and, you know, explore it and look at the wonder of it, and that we all need to open our minds and to explore life and the nature of life.
You know, sometimes I wonder, is it good that there's just a handful of individuals who are willing to always think out of the box? Or is it good that there are a number of people who just don't want to?
Well, I think it's important that some of us think out of the box, because,
yeah,
you know, what's out of the box at one time becomes accepted at another time.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I mean, in a sense, being out of the box got me on a lot of famous television shows. That was exciting and interesting. But they were shows that led to conflict, because they then invited, see, they didn't tell me this, but, you know, you'd get a call, say, would you like to be on the television? Yeah, sure. I'd go down to talk. And then who's there waiting for me? Other doctors and people saying, you're crazy. That doesn't
right.
make sense, you know.
Yeah.
Now, the audience would be nodding their heads in agreement, but people sitting around me would be telling me that, you know, it's not scientific, it doesn't make sense, even though I was telling them what I call true stories, you know what I mean? But you see, they were saying it's an anecdote, it's not statistically valid, and it's a, but it was a truth, if you know what I mean, that if someone was supposed to die and they're walking around perfectly healthy today and I would tell their story, you know, they would try to have an excuse why it happened, the wrong diagnosis, or maybe it was the treatment. But I'm trying to learn from the person what happened in their life, why they didn't die when they were supposed to. And the term that to me was the most significant is in Solzhenitsyn's book, Cancer Ward. See, here's a nun doctor who has had cancer and writes about it. And in his book, he comes up with the term, a rainbow-colored butterfly flutters out of the book, representing self-induced healing. Because one of the men is reading from the book, and and the description is, as though a rainbow-colored butterfly fluttered out of the greater book, the book, and they all held up their foreheads and cheeks for its healing touch. Say, self-induced healing. And that's what I've come to learn, that there is a pattern to people who exceed expectations, who live up to their potential. They not die based on statistics or what a doctor tells them, but take on the challenge. And we have, all of us can learn from those people because they become our teachers. You know, it's a pattern. See, psychologists and psychiatrists are more familiar with this because they will work with people, help them straighten out their lives, and see that it affects their survival and their mortality. And one psychologist, Bruno Klopfer, back in the 40s or 50s, was given a couple of dozen personality profiles of people with cancer. And he correctly predicted something like 20 out of 24 times who would have a fast-growing, who would have a slow-growing tumor. Twice he said, I can't tell, and twice he was wrong. But you see, here he is just looking at a personality and predicting the future for that person. And I began to see these things. And again, it's not blaming the patient. You got a bad personality. But it's, how can I be your life coach and help you to change your life and your personality so your body gets what I call a live message. In other words, if you love your life and love your body, it will do all it can to keep you alive. Monday morning, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. having a dog at home improved the survival rate from 26% to 5% a year after a heart attack. A house with no dog, 26%. A house with a dog, 5%. Relationships, all these things relate to survival. Women with the same cancers as men live longer. You know, it isn't about their hormones, or I always say, or sleeping with them, because married men live longer than single men with the same disease. It's about relationships. And not just, you know, about I have to work and earn money. No, I'm not talking about living a role. I'm talking about meaningful personal relationships. And those people live longer and often survive things that, you know, doctors think are going to kill them. And they have a reason to be alive. It could be 9 kids. It could be 12 cats. I have all kinds of stories. But people don't die because other lives depend on them.
Yeah. You know, there are two stories I want to share with you. Thanks. That was powerful. One of my students, her mother was diagnosed with cancer, and that was about 4 years ago. And the doctors told her that she only had 3 to 6 months max to live. So she decided not to tell her mother that she's been diagnosed with cancer. and she has lived 4 years later. Now, right. That's powerful.
Well, there's go to my website and read Deceiving People into Health, BernieSiegelMD.com.
Yeah.
You see,
yeah.
Because I did the same thing with my wife years ago when she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and the doctor told me what was going to happen to her. So I lied to her. I told her she was having a reaction to some birth control pills. And, you know, after a while, it became too much work to keep lying, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It was easier
mm-hmm.
to tell the truth. But by then, you see, I could tell her the truth with hope, if you know what I mean. Not what this negative, neurologist is telling me, predicting the future and what's going to happen. And I may add, oh, boy, it's about 50. I said, oh, boy, because we've been married a long time. I was trying to think back. So it's around 50 years since, you know, she was told that. And here she sits, by my side. So that's the thing that you learn from experience, that doctors don't know the future. And because I did a lot of children's surgery, that's when I learned how important my words were. The kids had faith in me and their parents. So we could lie to them for their benefit, if you know what I mean.
Right.
I would tell them something as simple as rubbing them with an alcohol sponge and say, it'll numb your skin, you won't feel any needle. And a third of the kids were hypnotized by that simple statement and didn't feel the needle at all. The other kids, I still felt it, but not the same pain that they would have had if I just held up the needle in front of them and, said, okay, I have to draw your blood. And then, that type of thing. So they were completely relaxed because of what I told them and had a very different experience. And
sure they did. Mind of a matter, isn't it?
Yeah, we need to learn to communicate. See, one other thing, this may interest you, because one of our children did it and really impressed me. He did in an art class in school. He took the word words and filled the canvas with that, just the word words, over and over again. And if I said to you, write the word words down four times with no space between them, what do they become? And what you realize is words, words, words become swords, swords, swords.
Oh.
And I always felt that you could literally kill or cure with words or a scalpel, a sword. And how we present them, it has powerful meaning to people. Yeah.
I've known someone my whole life, and I've watched her continuously tell herself she's sick, and I've watched her go to doctors after doctors,
right.
And they've done her tests, they've done all of the research on her, and they say, but there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah.
And she keeps saying, yes, my chest hurts, I can't breathe, this is happening, that is happening. And I've observed her emotionally walk around with a pain within her own soul.
That's
and
right.
the only relationship that would make her feel some sort of a connectivity was the one that she put in her body to say, I'm in pain, even though there physically was no pain.
Well, I can tell you. Go ahead. All right. I didn't mean to.
No, it's just, it's heart-wrenching, especially when it's someone close to you. But it's a great teacher because you get to see the power of the mind, and you have researched and written extensively on the mind-body connection and the role it plays in healing.
Let me give you a line from Alice Miller. Our childhood is stored up in our bodies, and although we can repress it, we can never alter it. Our feelings can be manipulated, our body tricked with medication, but someday the body will present its bill. For it is as incorruptible as a child who, while still whole in spirit, will accept no compromises, and it will not stop tormenting us until we stop evading the truth. Your friend did not grow up with love. I can guarantee you that. Yeah. And so she has stored this. And what you could do is reparent her, keep loving her. And by that, I don't mean telling her, you need to take this, do that, love you. It's be there for her constantly. It's because if she experiences rejection again, it's just proving what her parents taught her, that you're not worthy of our love. you're a problem. But if you keep loving her, and I saw this as a doctor, that if I kept giving people return appointments, even though they were self-destructive and not doing a damn thing, they
were getting better.
Ultimately realized they were worth something and then began to take care of themselves. You see, because I think of a woman, it was humorous to me. You have a sign that says no smoking in your waiting room years ago. Woman comes in and lights a cigarette under the sign, okay? And she's sitting there right next to it. And I walk in the waiting room, and I just burst out laughing. And she looked at me. I said, because it's obvious you want attention. Come on in, and we'll talk. And, you know, that changed her. What she was testing me was, get out of here. You know what I mean? You're going to act like that. I don't want you as a patient. And then she'd say, oh, he's like everybody else. You know, I'm not worth anything. But the fact that I could laugh and say, hey, come on in, and that I could say, I love you. You know, you don't need to do that to get attention. And I want you to take care of yourself and love yourself. I always say, love your life, love your body. Amazing things happen.
Yeah, at the end of the journey.
Oh, one other point popped into my head. What I would say to your friend is, see, when she's saying, oh, I'm in pain, I'm this, I'm that, say to her, what words would you use to describe what you're going through? Since you don't have a diagnosis, what words would you use to describe your experience? The words she tells you will be about her life and what needs to be fixed in her life to help her get better. See? Now, what do I mean? I mean, if you say draining, what's draining you? Roadblock, what's blocking you? What's confusing you? What makes you feel like a failure? Because those are all words that have come out of people, failure, confusion. See, once that happens, then people will say, my curse has become a blessing. Why? Well, it's been a wake-up call. It's been a new beginning, see? Because some people will say that because of how they've changed their life based on what they are going through. You know, they really wake up to a different life, and then some wonderful things begin to happen. The way I put it is charcoal, well, there's a country western song, I'm a block of coal, but I could be a diamond someday. The charcoal, under pressure, becomes a diamond. So just as hunger makes you get something to eat, if you don't, see, I'd remind her of that too. Say, do you get upset when you're hungry? No. What do? I get something to eat. Then why don't we look at what nourishment you need to help you feel better about yourself and your life? How can we change your life and nourish you? And
well, I'm going to have her call you. in your book, you've just come out with a new book called A Book of Miracles, Inspiring True Stories of Healing, Gratitude, and Love. I believe there's a subject in your book of a woman whose cancer helped her heal by teaching her to stand up for herself. Could you share a little bit more with us on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think not just that story, but a lot of women. Because, and believe me, I try to make this point to women, to not live a role, see, not be the mother, the wife, you know, be submissive, but to speak up for themselves so that a woman should have a life of her own. One woman, when she developed cancer, drew a picture. I mean, she splits herself down the middle. Half of her is the mommy, and half of her is the professional. Now, if you look at the picture, you know damn well she loves being home with her kid and not going to work, you know, in terms of the colors and the expression on her face. So for some people, you see, as I said, the curse becomes a blessing because you realize, you know, I'm mortal. I'm going to be here for a limited time, so why don't I start paying attention to my heart, not my head, and pay attention to my feelings and do what I love to do. And then they get an incredible gift. They end up living longer as well as enjoying the time that they're here and not being what I call a good patient, which derives from the term submissive sufferer. See, they become a responsible participant in their own life. I mean, I've met people, I mean, some of it, this was really humorous in the end, because this was a woman who was agoraphobic, and her husband left her because She said, I don't write checks. I'm afraid I'll make a mistake. I don't go out if it's raining. I don't this. I don't that. And her husband finally said, I can't stand this. And he left her. She came to my office and she developed cancer. You know, we talked about all these things. A few months later, I get a phone call from her children. I said, what's the matter? Is your mother all right? Yeah, she's all right, but she's out there whitewater rafting, you know, jumping out of airplanes, doing all these things. We're afraid she's going to kill herself. I burst out laughing because here's a woman who won't go out of the house, is now scaring her kids, you know, risking her life, doing things, skydiving, whitewater rafting. Why? Because, hey, I just learned I had cancer. I'm going to die someday. So what the hell's the point of being afraid of going out and enjoying myself?
It is about happiness, isn't it, Bernie? We are pushing happiness away, even though it comes in a variety of forms every day in our lives.
Right.
We've got to keep embracing happiness as perhaps one of life's greatest healing forces.
I use the word gratitude, you know, that to look at what you're grateful for. As a matter of fact, I mean, because every morning early on I walk the dogs, and I notice what's in my mind, you know, because I'm alone. Out, it's like a meditation, and I see how often the negative stuff starts your day. What I have to do today, what's going to happen, and I switch to what am I grateful for, say a few prayers, pray for other people, and then by the time the walk is done, I'm a hell of a lot healthier person than just thinking about all the troubles that are confronting me today. And so, again, the only thing we control, I always say to people, are our own thoughts. So I'm in charge of what goes on in my head. And I work at being grateful for life. I mean, and I mean that. This morning, I felt like I walked into heaven because the humidity's gone, a breeze is blowing, the sun is shining. I mean, it's like, thank you, God, for today. It's just nothing to complain about. Just to feel it was just wonderful. And an exercise people can do that I like to suggest, start on day one of the month, which we're almost to, and use the letter A. So when you wake up on August 1st, say, what three things am I grateful for that begin with the letter A? The next day, what three things that begin with the letter B? And you go through the 26 letters of the alphabet, and then you get a couple of days off, say, where you don't have to do anything. But what I find is that it just changes your entire feelings. It changes your chemistry, because when you walk out of the house thinking, okay, what am I grateful for? What a difference. Then, what do I have to do today? What problems? You know, the plumber's coming, the electrician, you know, I have to go to the drugstore, get shopping, whatever it is, go to work. But what am I grateful for? And I may add, to make it even a little harder, the next month you can't use the same three things you thought of. So as crazy as this may sound, and I've done this, that's why I know it works. You see, by the second, third, fourth month, you're really working hard. What am I grateful for that begins with A? No, I used that one before. And so, you know, you're working so hard at what am I grateful for, you get a kick out of it, and you just feel good doing it.
Actually, you almost actually get away from yourself after a while, and you really start to enjoy yourself.
You get it. Yeah, you're laughing at yourself.
I love it.
And I may add, the healthiest state I think you literally can be in is when you lose track of time. Do what you love to do, something creative, and lose track of time. You can't have pain. See, your friend, I mean it. I mean, I had a serious back injury from shoveling snow and other things, and it really was, I could barely stand. But I noticed something. When I went to the operating room where I, you know, had cases I had to operate on people, I could stand for hours with no pain at all. And I could paint portraits because I was a painter. I could stand in front of the easel and paint for hours. And it suddenly occurred to me, you know, you've been standing here doing this now that you're done, I got to go lie down. and that really impressed me, you know, that the message your body is getting when you're into that creative state. Let me get back to a moment. See, A Book of Miracles, to me, the one thing that I thought was common is that I place before you life and death, good and evil, choose life.
There you go.
And when you choose life, what you're doing is life-enhancing for yourself and everyone else. And that's when the miracles happened. See, that's when a disease could become a gift. A person shows up who saves your life. You have a dream. I mean, it's just fascinating stories. And they're not about illness. I mean, some are, but most of them are just about other things that happened in people's lives that were really miraculous and changed everything for them. But it's when, again, they were choosing to do something to benefit others as well. Let me just share something so people understand. A couple gets discharged from the armed forces on the West Coast. They're going to drive cross-country to go home and enjoy the trip like a vacation. Their car, however, develops a problem. Every time they come to a hill, the car barely makes it over the hill. So they're holding up traffic, causing problems. No mechanic knows what's wrong. They decide to drive at night. See, that impressed me. They are not saying, well, we want to have a vacation, so if we hold up, people are getting in the way, that's their problem. You know, they say, no, we don't want to cause a problem. We'll drive at night. And so they're driving at night in Nevada, come to a hill. They're slowing down. They pull off the road to let another car go by. But it doesn't go by. It pulls over and stops. And they're getting a little nervous until the man comes over and says, I am one of the original designers of your car, a Pontiac Le Mans. One of the hoses is sucking gas. It's supposed to conserve fuel, but it's sucking too much, so you're having a problem. I'll fix it for you. And he blocks the line. I think he sticks a pencil in it or something, this tube. And they have a wonderful trip home across country after that. Now, You see, what impresses me, Nevada in the middle of the night, you meet a designer of your car. You see, if they decided to drive during the day and not care about other people, they'd never meet this man.
And yeah, I hear you.
So-called coincidences that people say were miracles because of what happened in their life.
I hear you. And your life is a miracle, Bernie. It's been wonderful having you on the show. Please tell our listeners how to get a hold of you. And come back again, huh?
I'm in Connecticut, so they have to reach towards Connecticut if they want to hold me. But if they want to communicate with me, it's www, you know, the W's, and then Bernie Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, BernieSiegelMD.com. And the contact emails just come right to me. So if they want to communicate, they can do that. And also my books, CDs, stories, all kinds of things, like deceiving people into health. There are a lot of articles I've written that are there that they can read.
Those are great. Those are the best ones. I'll definitely pick up a few, and let's get you back on the show again. And
all right,
thank
dear.
You.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Love to your wife, huh?
Thank you, yes.
All right. Take good care. Bye-bye. That was Dr. Bernie Siegel, a man of wisdom and definitely a physician of compassion. Those are the kinds that we need more of, the ones who will spend time with us when we really need it, and even sometimes when we don't. We're signing out here and wishing you good health, happiness, and bliss.